We're going to discuss about the deliverance of Nala Kuvara and Mani Griva. It's page 17 in our textbook. In other words, this is the pastime of the Damodar Leela. And of course, the month of Kartik, or the month of Damodar, is starting just in 4 days, I think. So this pastime is very relevant. Of course, we sing Radha Damodar, Jai Radha Damodar. But this is the pastime not of Radha Damodar, but of Yashoda Damodar. There is a Radha Damodar pastime in which Srimati Radharani ties up Lord Krishna, and therefore we can sing about Radha Damodar, but it's not this pastime. This is the pastime of Yashoda Damodar. Anyway, still we'll sing Jai Radha Damodar, I'm sure. But strictly speaking, this is the pastime of Yashoda Damodar. Dhamma means ropes and udara means waist or belly. So, this pastime then, top of page 17, is illustrating what happens if one gets too carried away, particularly by wealth, aristocratic birth, but particularly wealth. It gives rise to all sorts of very degraded things are stated here, and in terms of our positions as aspiring devotees, it's also very relevant. And what we have said here is that the remedy which Narada Muni finally recommends for Nala Kuvara and Mani Griva is one of the key things that Srila Prabhupada recommended for people generally. That is simple living and high thinking. That's like the key, you could say, to curing the anatha, getting free from the anatha, at least in our terms, as aspiring devotees. So this pastime, Damodar pastime, very wonderful pastime, we find in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that there is a type of sequence in the pastimes as they're presented. Sequence in terms of the relationships between Krishna and his devotees, which are being described. First of all, the parental relationship is being focused on, from the time of Krishna's appearance up until the time where he's actually able to start going out herding the calves initially. So that's the time where Vatsalya Ras is prominent. So we find in the first chapters, this is up to about chapter 10 or 11 or so of the 10th canto, that Vatsalya Ras is the main sort of background to the different pastimes that are going on. Then, for some chapters from that point, Sakya Ras becomes the main relationship. Krishna with the cowherd boys, herding the calves, then herding the cows. And then a little later on, Madhurya Ras, or the conjugal relationship with Krishna, that becomes the focal relationship. So of course we know that Vatsalya Ras is actually higher than Sakya Ras, but still, in terms of the sequence of Krishna's pastimes as he grows up in Vrindavan, Vatsalya Ras is coming first, then Sakya Ras, and then Madhurya Ras. So this particular pastime, Damodar Leela, takes place on who knows which day? Someone could put their hand up and tell us. Brihat Mridanga Varu. Yes, this takes place on Diwali day. So Diwali, what's the date of Diwali this year? Anyone know? Offhand? Is it the 3rd? 3rd, right. Day before Govardhan Puja. So, do you want to just... So, can be a little meditation for us. Is this volume up too high? No? It just seems to be feeding back a bit. I don't know if you can adjust at all. Of course, I can always move this closer. That's all right? Okay. So, it can be a little meditation on Diwali Day. Of course, you can also meditate on the number of pastimes performed on Diwali Day. Krishna killed Narakasura on Diwali Day. And, of course, Lord Ram returned. But for us, the most important pastime on the Diwali day is this pastime of Yashoda Damodar, the Damodar Leela. So, Mother Yashoda, as a model mother, as the model mother, the mother of God, so she must be the model mother, she was always in a mood of deep concern about her little boy Krishna. She wanted the very best for him, including that he get the best training. She was very concerned that Krishna not get spoilt. Then he might grow up bad and become some sort of social misfit, something like that. So she was always in anxiety. She was always in anxiety. Krishna would go out and steal butter and yogurt and do all sorts of things. Even Krishna would go so far, go to the extreme of sometimes when he was in the house of one of the other gopis, if he felt in the mood for it, if he felt mischievous enough, he would urinate on the floor. Terrible. Perhaps we should open the window, do you think? Turn the fan on. And when reports of these things would get back to Mother Yashoda, oh, she would really be terribly upset. Sounds like we're going to take off. Yeah. He was always meditating, naturally, on Krishna, in a mood of maternal concern, like the model mother. And of course Krishna, he is such a rascal that he would put her into anxiety so often. There are so many stories. One little story that comes to mind is that Krishna, there was one elderly gopi who got a little sort of agitated, transcendentally, by the fact that Krishna would come around regularly stealing her butter and yogurt. So she set a trap and she caught Krishna. And then she told Krishna, right, now I'm taking you to Mother Yashoda and I'm going to make her chastise you right in front of me and will teach you a good lesson. So poor little Krishna was crying, very upset and embarrassed. He didn't really know what to say, apparently, or what to do. So she took him by the hand and started dragging him over to Mother Yashoda's house. But on the way, little did she know, she didn't notice, Krishna transformed himself into her own son. And she was dragging her own son along. But of course she thought, it's Krishna. So she finally arrived in front of Mother Yashoda's house and knocked on the door. Mother Yashoda came and this gopi said, just see, I caught your rascal son at last, stealing my butter and yogurt. And now I want you to punish him and chastise him in front of me. I want to see that he gets taught a lesson. So Mother Yashoda was looking at the lady and at the little boy who was the lady's own son, and Mother Yashoda was thinking, what is going on here? So she said to the other gopi, haven't you made a little mistake here? And then she pointed at the boy, and the other gopi looked down and saw, it's my own son. So she was completely bewildered. She didn't know what to think at all. She felt too embarrassed. So in that state of confusion and perplexity, she went walking off home with her, apparently her little boy, in tow. But on the way back, Krishna transformed himself back into Krishna and pulled at her hand. And she looked down, she saw that it's Krishna again. So this was too much. And Krishna told her that you should watch out. You better not do that again. If you do that again, I'll change myself into your husband. Then you'll really look like a fool. So we shouldn't try to cheat Krishna, because he'll cheat us back better. So these pastimes of in Vatsalya Ras, they're full of all sorts of exchanges like that. That the elderly gopis would get disturbed that Krishna was coming and stealing and urinating and doing all these things, breaking things. Sometimes they'd come and pinch the babies and make the babies scream. So Krishna was really, as they say, a bit of a case. So they would get very upset, and then they'd go to Mother Yashoda and complain. You've got to look after this boy of yours. And so Mother Yashoda would grab Krishna in front of them and say, you hear that? And Krishna would be in anxiety, and he'd start crying and look very beautiful and sort of melancholy. And these other elderly gopis would see Krishna looking so sweet, and there's Mother Yashoda telling him off. And then they say, no, 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 no. Don't chastise him like that. It's not important. Just forget it. And earlier they would have told Mother Yashoda that you keep your son here in your house. You don't let him come to my house. So Mother Yashoda would tell Krishna, you stay here. You don't go to their houses. But then the elderly gopis would say, no, 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 don't worry. Just let him come. It's all right. So in this way, these pastimes would go on. So this Damodar pastime is like, you could say, the cream of these pastimes in which Mother Yashoda and Krishna are having their loving exchanges in Vatsalya Ras. And of course, it's one of the favorites of the devotees. And Srila Prabhupada makes some nice comments in his purports about Vatsalya Ras. And he even makes some comments, like in a very sort of, just very straightforward way, about how devotees may feel attracted to Vatsalya Ras, and if they do, they should act in this way and that way. I mean, just like, just very, very straightforward. This is very interesting, very nice. So, as a little background, we know that Mother Yashoda, in this mood of great concern for Krishna, so great, it's described that she would be ready to give her life a million times if one hair on Krishna's body got harmed. I'm sure some of you are mothers, and we have some fathers here also, so you know what parental concern, parental affection is like. It's a very strong thing, very deep thing. So just consider Mother Yashoda's maternal concern. She'll give her life a million times if one little hair becomes harmed somehow. So she was so concerned that out of Nanda Maharaja's herd of 900,000 cows, she personally selected a small group which were the best. And out of all the acres and acres and square miles even of pasturing grounds all around, including Govardhan Hill, she chose an area which had the very best grass. So those best cows got the best grass. Therefore, naturally, they produced the best milk. These things are very intimately related. Then she would personally milk those cows and personally churn the yogurt, or personally then take the milk and make so many things herself. Churn the yogurt into butter, make the yogurt, separate the cream, and all these things she would do herself. And Prabhupada actually is explaining this in Srimad Bhagavatam in his purports, that one of her inspirations for doing this was because she knew that every day Krishna was going out and stealing butter, milk, yogurt, and all these things. So she had like a transcendental complex. She was thinking that we're not providing like a suitable quality of dairy products for Krishna. Therefore, he's not satisfied. And therefore, he goes outside and he raids the other houses. So in this mood of maternal concern, she was personally doing everything to try and give Krishna the very best, but still he would go out. So the scene is Mother Yashoda is churning yogurt into butter. In the Western world, they make butter from cream, but in India, traditionally, butter is made from yogurt. So she was personally churning the yogurt into butter. While she was doing that, she was singing songs about Krishna, which she had made up herself, or which she had had some other people who were poetically minded make up. Prabhupada makes the point that this should be the practice of persons eager to remain Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. This incident shows how Krishna conscious Mother Yashoda was. To stay in Krishna consciousness, we should follow such persons. Then there's a very nice description of her physical appearance. Anyone know what color sari she was wearing? Hand up, please. Yes? No. Sankarshanva. Yeah, yellow. Saffron yellow. Saffron yellow. With a belt tied about her full hips, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face with its very beautiful eyebrows was wet with perspiration. And Malati flowers were falling from her hair. Very beautiful description of Mother Yashoda. Then Prabhupada, I'll just read this little bit, Prabhupada refers to Vatsalya Rasa in a very like, sort of, like it's an everyday subject almost. Anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yashoda, which means we should know what they are first and then we can contemplate them. It is not that one should desire to become Mother Yashoda, for this is Mayavad. Either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship, in any way, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not try to become like them. Therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees must cherish this description, always thinking of Mother Yashoda's features, how she was dressed, how she was working and perspiring, how beautifully the flowers were arranged in her hair, and so on. One should take advantage of the full description provided here by thinking of Mother Yashoda in maternal affection for Krishna. So, beautiful description, something we can try to remember, particularly during these days, this month of Kartik, the month of Damodar, We can try and meditate like this, and it'll certainly help us in our Krishna consciousness, whatever our stage may be. So then Krishna wanted to be breastfed. And as young children do, he just decided that I have to be breastfed. And that's it. So whatever my mother's doing, she has to stop because I want to be breastfed. So that's the business now. So he went up to Mother Yashoda and grabbed hold of the churning rod. So Mother Yashoda could see, yes, this is a sign. Krishna wants to be breastfed. So she started to breastfeed him. But then, somehow, by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, there was some milk on the stove, and that milk started to bubble and begin to boil over. So Mother Yashoda saw this, and she became very concerned. She didn't want the milk to just boil over and become spoilt and lost. So she thought, oh, I have to remedy this problem situation which has arisen. So she put down Krishna. And what did Krishna do? Seeing, of course, as far as he was concerned, his mother had nothing better to do than breastfeed him, he started crying. He got very cranky and started crying. He was very angry, actually. There's a very interesting discussion prompted by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Prabhupada refers to it in the purport, it sort of indirectly. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he raises the question, I'm sure some of you have heard this discussion before, that devotional service means pleasing Krishna. But here, Mother Yashoda displeased Krishna. Actually, she displeased him very much, to the point that he got angry and started smashing things and had like a bit of a tantrum. So does this mean that Mother Yashoda was in Maya? Does it mean that? Just an attached housewife not wanting to waste some milk. Does it mean that? I don't think so. No. Actually, that milk was for Krishna, to be used in some sort of preparation or something. That milk was for Krishna. So her inspiration to save the milk from boiling over was not just in the mood of household chore, but it was in the mood of pure devotional service. And her understanding was that if I save the milk and then Krishna is able to enjoy it later, Krishna will be happier than if he's able to just drink my breast milk now, but he doesn't get to enjoy this milk in the future in a little while, whenever I've made it into whatever I'm going to make it into. So actually the consideration was how to please Krishna more. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a very subtle sort of embellishment to the whole idea that in Goloka Vrindavan, everything is conscious, including the milk. And the milk was watching Mother Yashoda breastfeeding Krishna. And the milk was thinking that if Krishna drinks his mother's breast milk to his satisfaction, then how am I going to serve him? So in order to stop that, so that later on he'd be able to engage in his service of feeding Krishna, therefore he started looking like he was going to boil over. He wasn't really going to boil over, but he just sort of made this display. Interesting. Everything in Goloka is alive. The rocks, the plants. It's described that in Goloka, the rice, the grains of rice, fight to see who can be first into the pot to be cooked for Krishna. They fight. And then Krishna eats them, but then they manifest again, and then they fight to jump in the pot again. And the flowers, when they see here comes Krishna walking along the forest path. Then they run over and throw themselves under Krishna's feet. And when Krishna stepped on them and walked past, they jump up again and run around in front of him again and throw themselves on the ground in front of his feet again. So everything, there's no such thing as a thing. Everyone in Goloka is living and conscious. Very wonderful. So anyway, this happened. So Mother Yashoda put down baby Krishna. Is everyone with us? Someone suggested that I get a water pistol. Do they sell water pistols in India? I don't know if that would be too bad. Like Aparad or something. Anyway. So Mother Yashoda put down Krishna to attend to the milk. Krishna got very angry. Actually, Prabhupada makes a very interesting, I said he makes an indirect reference to these comments of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Prabhupada says that sometimes a devotee may have a number of duties to do, and it appears that they are to be done at the same time, and therefore confusion may arise, what to do first, or what's more important, like that. This is not a very unusual experience for devotees. So Prabhupada says, it's the duty of the devotee to do one thing first and other things later, and the proper intuition to do this is given by Krishna. So actually Mother Yashoda was being inspired by Krishna and Purnamasi, Yogamaya, to attend to that milk. But Krishna, on the surface, didn't take it like that. So, biting his lips, crying false tears, and generally in that type of mood, mischievous and disturbed mood, he went over to the yogurt container and smashed it with a piece of stone. And then the yogurt and butter, because it was sort of halfway in between being turned into butter. So yogurt and butter mixture went on the ground. Mother Yashoda then came back, but Krishna, knowing he'd been naughty, he decided to sort of get lost or make himself scarce. So he tried to hide, well, he went away at least to another place in the compound. And Mother Yashoda, she came back and saw, here's this yogurt I was churning into butter, but now the container's smashed and everything's on the floor. And so she thought it must have been Krishna. And then she decided to find Krishna, and she was able to. Anyone know, anyone of the Mataji's know, how she was able to find Krishna? Yes, butter smeared footprints. Yes, caught in the act. So, then there's the chase, and eventually Mother Yashoda catches Krishna. She didn't fail to catch him. The Bhagavatam explains, even though the yogis can't, in his form as Paramatma, which is not even his supreme form, even though the yogis struggle to realize Paramatma, for years or even lifetimes, even though the impersonalists, they struggle and strain their brains for many years or lifetimes to realize the impersonal feature, Mother Yashoda just ran after Krishna and caught him. And Krishna was scared of her. So just consider her position. The materialists are begging Krishna, oh God, please help me. Give us this day our daily bread, or whatever it may be. Give me some of you would know this. Give me a house and a car and a colour TV, Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. That would make sense to the Indians amongst us. They're begging God, please do something for me. And sometimes, like when they pray, give us this day our daily bread, sometimes they get a free loaf of bread. And they think, oh, we got the mercy today. So, but Mother Yashoda, What is her position? Krishna in his eyes, those beautiful little eyes of baby Krishna, she became overwhelmed with compassion and love. So any idea of doing something like to get on his case in one way or another, that all just dissolved immediately. But still she thought she should tie him up. Now why? Anyone know why, as a matter of interest? Any of our mothers know why? Or anyone?
Because she still wants how we should be
punished. Not exactly.
To keep him from further mischief?
Not even that exactly. Mother Parvati?
In India, it's a common practice to tie up a small child.
Yeah, I know.
Out of harm's way.
Yeah, that's sort of the idea more. She was thinking, he's scared now. He's like sort of bewildered by fear, and he's, you know, a little bit beside himself even with fear. So now he's so scared that he may just run out, he may run away. And if he runs away, then what'll happen? He'll get lost. And it's just going to make things worse for him, actually. So therefore she thought, I should tie him up just to keep him in the house, so he doesn't go running away and get lost or get caught up in some bigger problem. So that was really her idea. Then we all know she took one piece of rope. It looked quite long enough to tie him up, and she put it around, but it was two fingers too short. So then there's a whole description, particularly in Gopal Champu, that she got another rope and another, but it kept being two fingers too short. And she never really thought, now wait a minute. The first rope was just two fingers too short. Now I've added a number of other pieces, so I've got a whole length of pieces of rope joined together, but still it's two fingers too short for getting around one time. She didn't think of that. This is Yoga Maya. But she just thought, we've got to get more rope. So she went to her neighbors and got all their rope, till she got all the rope in the village. But it was still two fingers too short. Then she went and got all the rope in the next village and the next village. Finally, all the rope in Vraj Mandala. But it was still two fingers too short. And then it became too much for her. And she was thinking, I have to do this. For his sake, I have to. Then Krishna became defeated again. So then he allowed that rope. Actually, he couldn't stop the rope. The rope then became long enough, and then she tied him up. And then he was there tied up, and he went crawling away, pulling the grinding mortar somehow, big grinding mortar, big heavy solid wood grinding mortar. Still, he was able to just pull it behind him, pulled it in between two Arjuna trees, and then carried on crawling, and with his force on that rope, pulling the mortar, knocked down those two trees. And then Nalakuva and Manigriva came, manifested out of the trees. Shukadev Goswami, just in regard to Mother Yashoda, that the closeness of the relationship, says, neither Lord Brahma nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who's actually the better half of the Supreme Lord, can ever get from the Supreme Lord, who's the deliverer, the giver of liberation, such mercy as given by Mother Yashoda. No one. Of course, the gopis got more later, but at this point in the recitation of the Bhagavatam, this is the greatest display of mercy so far. So we know Nalakuva and Manigriva, they had been on the banks of the Mandakini Ganges, generally trying to enjoy themselves naked with a group of heavenly young ladies. And Narada Muni came on the scene. And the young ladies, they had the decency to cover themselves, but Nalakuva and Manigriva, because they're intoxicated and generally in sort of a low state of consciousness, it didn't really occur to them. So they just carried on sort of cavorting around. So Narada realized, these poor boys, they've got a very high position, but it's very unfortunate they've become degraded by it. So I've got to help them. So he cursed them to become trees. Then there's a very interesting discussion, which is all, it's very like directly explaining the anatha involved here. Very interesting description on pages 18 and 19 here in our book. Very interesting. Narada Muni makes the point that there are different types of material attractions. There's reference, not here exactly, but in the Bhagavatam there's a reference to Queen Kunti and the verse in the 8th chapter of the first canto, Janmaishvara Shuta Shibir, Edamana Madapuman, that people who become bewildered by high birth, opulence, high education and beauty, they can't call out the name of the Supreme Lord with feeling because their heart has been given to these other things. They've given their heart to the other things, so they can't give their heart to Krishna. And Narada Muni here says that of these things, wealth is the worst. More than beauty, more than birth, and more than learning. Wealth can bewilder one more. So therefore we're suggesting as a remedy, I mean, some of us may be living in semi-poverty or thereabouts, but in some of our cases money may come our way in one way or another. It's just sometimes it happens to devotees. So if it happens, we have to be very careful to see that we don't become corrupted. Personally, I have had experience of one devotee couple. They were nice devotees. Then the wife got an inheritance, $300,000 or something, which is a substantial amount of money, but not that much, really. Not like some unlimited fortune or something like that. Anyway, substantial amount of money, and they became bewildered and left Krishna consciousness. Some devotees, they go out on Sankirtan and collect $50, and they may even become bewildered by that. And be thinking, well, what do I need? What should I get myself? Anyway, money's the honey, and money can corrupt the mind. So Prabhupada recommended simple living and high thinking, and that's exactly what Narada Muni recommends, or is thinking within his mind is appropriate for Nalakuva and Manigriva. So he really gives them a simple existence in the form of trees. But the basic principle is a very important principle. Sometimes we live in very opulent temples. Prabhupada explained, the servant of the king, he lives like the king. He lives in the same building. He eats the leftover food of the king. And we're doing the same thing. In some parts of the world, like here for example, big temple, very nice facility. And we're living in it also. Very nice food. And we may get that food, the remnants of the Lord. So we don't want to become bewildered by these things. So as devotees, we always have to remember this principle of simple living and high thinking, not high living and simple thinking, which is the general way of the materialists. So Narada gives a very interesting explanation. We're actually going to ask you to study pages 18 and 19 and extract 5 points which Narada makes in his like thinking. He's thinking to himself actually about what to do about these two boys. So 5 points. He discusses about how they're identifying with their bodies. There's a number of points there. Then he discusses about the value of poverty, which we'll mention a couple of points about now. And so extract 5 points on any of these subjects for our test on Tuesday. So he first of all makes the point that these boys are bewildered by their bodies. They're thinking, this is my body, or even, this is me body, I am this body, therefore I not only have the right to enjoy it, but I must enjoy it. It's my business. But Narada makes the point that, does this body really belong to you? And he then suggests different people who it could be argued that the body belongs to. You'll find this here, page 18, the first paragraph. Does it belong to your employer? Because your employer is feeding you. If there was no employer, then you might starve to death and lose your body. So, this is one way of understanding who owns your body is to see who's feeding it. A father will give his daughter to be married to a boy on the understanding that he, the father, or in this case it'll be the grandfather of the child who comes eventually, that the grandfather will be given the first child. This practice was there sometimes in the Vedic system. Does it belong to a person who may steal it, if you get kidnapped perhaps, or a slave master if you become a slave? Does it belong to your children who burn it in the end? I mean, if it wasn't their body, how could they burn it? If they didn't have a right. Or does it could possibly be argued it belongs to the dogs and vultures who eat it, who may eat it. So, Narada in the Bhagavatam says that it's so unclear who the body belongs to. So if you, living in the body, decide that, well, I guess it belongs to me and therefore I'll use it. He says this is it's practically dishonest. At least it's a very sort of unclear type of thinking that you just conclude that it's mine, therefore I can do with it as I like. So Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam says actually, this body belongs to material nature. In other words, this body belongs to everyone. Therefore we should use our bodies in service to everyone. Or in other words, spreading Krishna consciousness. Then he's thinking to himself that actually it'd be good for them if they lost everything. And that would humble them and make them realize what fools they've been. He says, to be in a poverty-stricken condition is very good. One benefit of being poverty-stricken is that without even wanting to, without even trying to, you perform austerities and penances. And you get the same benefit that great renunciates who go off to the Himalayas, voluntarily giving up their homes and everything. You get the same benefit, actually, as those people, just in the course of your day-to-day existence. The same benefit of performing austerities, although in your case, it's in the case of someone who's poverty-stricken, it's involuntary, but they get the same benefit. I'll just read a little bit of the purport to the verse that I mentioned from the first canto, Janmaishvara Shuta Shribhya. Queen Kunti says, my lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who's on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So Prabhupada says that it's said in Shastra that if you chant the holy name of the Lord once, you can get rid of a quantity of sin that you're unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. And there's not the least exaggeration in this statement. But there's a quality to such utterances also. You probably know the story of Draupadi. When Dushasana wanted to undress her in public. So first of all, quite understandably, she was fighting back, trying to hold on to her sari. But she couldn't do anything. Because Dushasana was a kshatriya. We hear Dushasana was 15 feet tall. And little Draupadi, small lady, not much she could do. But she was trying and getting nowhere. But then she realized that, or she began to realize that, what can I do? So she let go with one hand and she was praying to Krishna. But she was still holding on with the other hand. And then it became more clear that she could actually do nothing. So she decided, I'll just depend on Krishna. So she let go altogether and just called out, Hey Krishna, Hey Govinda. Then Krishna intervened, but not till then. So the tendency to get attached to these apparently desirable materially things, this is the anatha which Nalakuvara and Manigriva are representing in a very direct way. And we should try to keep our lives simple. Keep our lives simple. Krishna is known as Akinchana Vitaya, the property of the materially impoverished. And it's also said that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins. Why? Because as a result one gets Krishna. But while one is thinking that I don't really need Krishna so much, he can be there, I don't mind, but not too much, because I want to have my other material facilities as well. Krishna is known as Hari, one who takes things away. Therefore some people, they think, because Krishna wants to help the devotees in this way so they don't become attached. You may have heard the story. Maharaj Yudhisthira was once lamenting that not enough people were becoming devotees. And he was thinking that the reason is because they all think that if I become a devotee, Krishna's going to take everything away and I'll have nothing. So therefore I'm not going to become a devotee of Krishna. So Maharaj Yudhisthira went to Krishna once. Some of you may have heard the story. He said, Krishna, my dear Lord, I want lots of money. Lots of money. I mean, really a lot of money. More than anyone's got. And Krishna was surprised. Really? You want lots of money? Maharaj Yudhisthira said, yes, lots. And I want a big palace. Actually, I want the biggest palace. Bigger than anyone. With lots of servants and everything. So Krishna was feeling very disappointed. Krishna said, oh, you want all those things? I thought all you wanted was pure devotional service. And Maharaj Yudhisthira said, no, 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 no. I want all these things. I want more than anyone. So Krishna said, well, you know, I'm really feeling a bit sad, but if you want it, I'll give it to you. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira told him, actually, the reason I want these things is because I've heard so many people say that I'm not going to become a devotee because devotees have nothing. But I want them to see that here's a devotee of Krishna and he has more than anyone else. And then they'll feel, oh yes, let me become a devotee of Krishna also. There are a couple of other little comments I could make, but I don't think that we have time. Any questions or comments from yourselves? Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate more on this simple living and high thinking? Practically, like, we see so many devotees and there is so much difference. I mean, for some person, simple living and high thinking is so many.
Is different from another person's simple living, I think.
Like some persons who have come from foreign countries, they are living in Vrindavan. And like they are living, it is luxurious for a person staying in India. So, how to accommodate all these things?
Well, of course, there's relativity in it. Like, in terms of vanashram, what is simple living for a householder, simple living at least, I mean, high thinking means thinking of Krishna and how to serve Krishna like that. That applies for everyone. Simple living, though, basically means enough to keep body and soul together in a responsible way. One doesn't want to take simple living to the point that one is not eating, one is not able to dress oneself, one is not able to keep warm, and one is thinking, oh, I've got to live simple. No, one has to live simply without, like, excess material assets and encumbrances, but in such a condition that one is able to render devotional service nicely. Yeah. So for a person who's inclined towards household life, if they don't have that facility, if they're just forced that no, our principle is simple living, so you can't be a householder. If they're just forced like that, then in most or all or so many cases at least, they won't be able to execute Krishna consciousness very nicely. Actually, they may just become bewildered. But in other cases, some people can. They can live celibate and it doesn't really disturb them too much, at least. They're able to carry on and remain absorbed. So that's good for them. So it just depends. It depends on the individuals, actually, and their position in vanashram, but ultimately individual condition. And of course the spiritual master and the association of devotees is there also to help give guidance. And the basic idea is that one should have what one needs to live in an adequate sort of way, so one can engage in devotional service enthusiastically and strongly, but not accumulate extra things which are unnecessary and which the mind can, well, which would be a manifestation of the attachment within the mind and which might then cause one to become degraded. So, you know, that's like the principle, the basic principle of simple living. And high thinking, as I said, means to be in Krishna consciousness, chant Hare Krishna, think of Krishna, serve Krishna like that.
Right, so we perform in any service, there's devotional service, a lot of it's dependent on the consciousness. And so two people can be doing the same service, but if it's a different consciousness, one could be doing Karma Yoga, one could be doing Bhakti Yoga.
That's true.
But you said earlier on that a person who is renounced, one could be doing it voluntarily, one could be doing it because he's forced to do so, but they get the same result.
See, this is referring to people like people who are just performing austerities, not devotees as such. People who perform austerities and penances, they get benefit, either karmakandiya benefit, depends on the nature of the austerities, karmakandiya benefit like Hiranyakashipu perhaps, eventually he got the benediction of Lord Brahma, or they may be performing austerities for spiritual elevation, like Vishvamitra was. He was performing austerities, meditating for so many years, performing Hatha Yoga. So, the benefits which people like that may get are given to a person who even involuntarily is performing the same austerities, like not eating. Some yogi or whatever may take a vow, I'll only eat every other day, perhaps. Something like that. So a person who, because they're so poverty-stricken, can only afford to eat every other day, they get the same benefit. It's explained actually in the Bhagavatam, in this chapter, where Narada is making these points in the 10th canto. So it's benefit of that sort. It's not benefit in terms of bhakti, because benefit in bhakti is in terms of one's service and the bhakti itself, not the material conditions.
Right.
Yeah. Mataji? Yes. There is a pastime of Radha Damodar. There's a pastime of Radha Damodar which I read some time ago. I forget the details. So I don't know if anyone here knows it. But in the end, Radharani ties Krishna up. And this is the pastime of Radha Damodar. But this pastime really, more specifically, is Yashoda Damodar. And seeing you've brought it up, I'll refer to Lalita Madhava. Rupa Goswami discusses this. It's when, I don't know how familiar you are with Lalita Madhava, but Krishna and Radharani, although he does know she's Radharani at that point, yes, in Nava Vrindavan in Dwaraka, they go into one cave and they find there's pictures of their pastimes in Vrindavan. So they're going from picture to picture and discussing them together. And Madhu Mangal is there also. So I'll just read the very brief description here. Madhu Mangal says, "Oh, here's Yashoda Devi, the queen of Gokula, beginning to personally churn butter." Krishna says with, like, heartfelt feeling, "My childhood mischief made my loving mother very anxious. When I see her in this way, my heart becomes like a pool of melted butter." And Navavrinda, who's like the presiding deity of Navavrindavan or New Vrindavan in Dwaraka, says, "My guru Vishvakarma composed the following verse. O Yashoda Devi, O queen of Raja, the same all-powerful Lord Krishna who binds the demigod Brahma and all other living entities in the three worlds with the three unbreakable ropes of the modes of nature, you have bound with a few slender ropes. How can I describe the great power you possess?" Then Navavrinda asks, "Why did the two Goyaka demigods leave without untying Krishna from the mortar?" Because they did wonder. Now here we are offering our prayers to Krishna who's just liberated us, but he's tied to a grinding mortar. So they thought maybe we should untie him. And they tried, but they couldn't. So Krishna, now crying, this is Krishna as an adult in Dwaraka, crying, "My mother tightly bound me with a strong rope of maternal love. Although I can release all living entities from the bonds of repeated birth and death, still I have no power to untie my mother's ropes. If I have no power, what can be said of the power of others to untie those ropes?" So we understand that Nalakuva and Manigriva tried to untie Krishna, they couldn't. Then Krishna tried to untie himself, and he couldn't. It was only when Mother Yashoda came back, she was able to untie Krishna. I understood that it was Mother Yashoda. Oh, is it? I see. Well, of course, Nanda Maharaj is in the same mood as Mother Yashoda, so same idea. Yeah. Okay, I think we have to end here. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We'll discuss a few points from it tomorrow, as we did in the article about Putana. Very, very interesting article. It's all related to education, children, Gurukul, and the like.